RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
So to the issue of charter schools. Charter school legislation has successfully passed in New Zealand, paving the way, some would say, for educational innovation and choice. Others would say maybe not. The Maxim Institute is an independent think tank working to promote the dignity of every person in New Zealand by standing for freedom, justice, compassion, and hope. And Marianne Spurdle is a researcher at the Maxim Institute, and we've invited Marianne on to talk about charter schools. Hi, Marianne. Thanks for coming on to RCR.
Hi, Paul. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so it kind of depends, do you think, where you are politically as to your attitude to charter schools?
It has been politicized. I'd agree with that. I don't think it depends on where you are politically. When we had a small rollout of a similar model about 10 years ago, the Maori Party was actually strongly in favor of partnership schools then. So it isn't necessarily the case, but it has been politicized, yes.
Yeah, okay. And those who are kind of not fans would say there is no evidence that charter schools were successful in their previous implementation in New Zealand, despite, you know, funding, et cetera. Were they even around long enough to know?
Well, you raise a good point, and there are a few things to speak about there. As far as how successful they were, well, of the 12 that were approved and operated, 11 of them are still running, 9 of them are designated character schools, 2 are state integrated, the 3 high schools were all exceeding average performance. So they weren't doing badly. How well they were doing is up for grabs because even though the Ministry of Education had a way of evaluating them, similar to the CREDO research in the States, which I'd like to talk about at some point, it never implemented that. So they only used qualitative research from, I think, a consultant, and they didn't actually collect the kind of data that would give us an answer on how well they did. But they didn't fail. That did not happen. They're still operating and operating well.
Yeah. Here, in reaction to that bill passing, the union people have been having their say. Our president of the country's largest teaching union, and who's that? I think NZEI President Mark Potter is saying that there are lofty ambitions for charter schools in New Zealand, but it would be an expensive experiment. There is no evidence. And in fact, it says it could lower the standard of teaching in New Zealand. But isn't he representing the sector that's destroying the education potential of many of our kids in huge numbers? So hardly in a position to comment, I wouldn't have thought.
Well, yes, yeah, some of the union policies don't necessarily encourage quality of teaching. There are a number of goals they have that don't necessarily raise the standard of teaching. I am guessing that what he's saying about lowering the standard of teaching refers to the fact that charter schools will be allowed to employ a certain percentage of teachers who are on a limited authority to teach. Now, what you've got to understand is a lot of public schools are currently, especially with the teacher shortage, employing a lot of teachers with a limited authority to teach. In other words, they're not fully accredited. So that's already happening in the public system. It will be allowed to be on a permanent basis for charter schools, yet to be seen what that percentage will be school by school. They will have to employ a certain number of registered teachers. The idea that because you don't have a full teacher registration means that it will be poor quality teaching is a bit of a leap there. It does mean that charter schools will be able to recruit people with what they feel to be relevant qualifications. Now, the schools will also have to show that they're meeting certain standards to keep operating. So there is an incentive right there to not hire somebody who's not going to be a good teacher. They also have more flexibility in what they pay teachers. And for many of those who are wanting to start up charter schools, their intention is to pay them more than the cap that the teachers union agreements currently put on teachers' pay. So there's actually latitude there to recruit people who currently wouldn't be recruited to teach in public schools, who arguably could be better. So saying that it's automatically going to lower the standard just because you can appoint a certain number of those on a limited authority to teach, there's really no good argument for that.
The union people sound like they're kind of threatened, you know, a little bit. That's the very defensive speak there. So charter schools could end up being very attractive to good teachers, right? And if they're paid more, then things start to groan and crack in the union world, don't they?
Well, it definitely won't add to their numbers, no.
Okay, but also there's that call for, you know, bulk funding has been around for a while.
Yeah.
And that was stamped on as well, and that would give the ability, right, of schools to pay different packages to, well, you know, teachers that perform well versus those who don't. So you can't have that, right?
It's a very good idea, because if you want to incentivize good teaching, that's a very simple way to do it. And at the moment, state schools can't. They can't do that.
Hmm.
So, yeah, as far as options that will allow better teaching practice, I think that's one way to incentivize it. And so if there are more schools able to do it, I think probably on the whole that will lead to better quality.
Is it going to end up, though, with like a you know, flapping door, one lot's in, and this becomes part of a coalition agreement and it gets implemented, but then the other lot comes in and they stamp on it in their first year and it's all over again?
Well, this is what happened. Yeah, this is what happened last time. I think there are quite a few things that are different this time. The idea that it failed before and we're just doing the same thing again, it's not accurate, because before, the total number of schools ever operating at one time was 12, serving fewer than 1,500 students. So it's a tiny initiative. And then those schools all had to admit 75% plus priority students. So it was very targeted to those students who, you know, most disadvantaged in mainstream schools. And they did really well with that. In fact, schools like that, many of which are people who want to provide schools like that, are applying for charter schools in this round to meet those needs that aren't being well met in mainstream. But it was very specific last time. The longest any school operated was 5 years. Some had been up and running only 1 year when the plug was pulled. This time around, it's actually going to be a far wider proposition where even public schools, if they meet the requirements that the approval board will be reviewing, they'll be able to change to become a charter school. Now, what that means is when there is a change of government, whether you know it's in a couple of years or 5 years or longer, there will be far more than 12 schools on board. By next year, they're hoping to have somewhere in the vicinity of 50 schools, most of whom will be former public schools. That's the plan of the current government. So it will be interesting to see if the opposition's intention to pull the plug on it, how viable that is when they next get the opportunity to do it, because there will be a lot of parents with a lot of kids in charter schools, and depending how well they do, that could be a very unpopular move.
Yeah. $153 million has been allocated. That's not much of the overall education budget, is it really?
Even though
quite a bit, but it's not really.
No. And when the schools get up and running, the per student funding will be matched to public school per student funding. So this has been kind of talked about as an expensive initiative, but other than transition costs, it doesn't look like the ongoing costs in that. If it's anything like the states, there'll be less than public school costs.
Did you wanted to mention the United States, so maybe it's a good time now.
Yeah. I've looked into different funding models for independent education in a few different countries, and the U.S.'s charter schools are most similar to what we'll be doing here. The first of those opened in the 1990s, so we've got years of data, and some of it's conflicting. There are so many elements that go into making education good or otherwise, that you can't just say, oh, if you do this, then this will succeed. It's far more complex. So asking whether or not charter schools have succeeded there, it's like, well, what type of charter school and in what area and using what kind of teaching method? But the Credo outfit, which is part of Stanford University, has been tracking this for 15 years, a little more than that. And the third report came out last year. They were very clear that the actual words they used was, against a backdrop of flat performance for the nation as a whole, the trend of learning gains for students enrolled in charter schools is both large and positive. It didn't mean every child who went to charter school did better than their equivalent in a state school. The odds of them doing better were greater. And the students who were most likely to excel in charter schools were those who were most disadvantaged. So immigrants, minorities, people with learning disabilities. So that's a positive.
How big do you think it could become here? I mean, we're a little country, but what proportion of the system could it occupy ultimately, do you think, if its full potential was unleashed?
Yeah, it really depends on so many different things, including opposition to it. As you've mentioned, the teachers' unions have been staunchly opposed. Last time around, they made sure that public schools didn't allow children from charter schools to be involved with sports or any other community stuff. They've discouraged tertiary institutions.
Wait on, back up that truck. I can't believe what I just heard. Seriously?
Yeah, they despite language about schools needing to work together, that very much didn't happen last time around. And the intention is basically to disadvantage charter schools.
In the end, it's disadvantaging children and stopping them.
I know.
If you're prepared to throw children under a bus, maybe you shouldn't be in the business of trying to educate them.
So it depends on how much schools actually do work together, including existing schools with the charter schools, how much support they have from the network, how much opposition they have. I've spoken to people who run independently operated schools, some of which have been charter schools last time around, and they're quite open about the fact that the opposition to them operating under that model, not because of the way they were teaching or who they were teaching, because they were serving underserved populations, but that actually made it quite onerous. So we've got factors like that are skewing how many will apply and so forth, and political considerations. In the UK, so there in the early 2000s, they began a similar to charter schools. They've got free schools and they've got academies. The academies are selective in admission. Free schools are not, which will be like charter schools here. You can't select which students attend and which don't. Mm-hmm. Aside from if you've got a special character, then there's an understanding that families who, you know, if it's a Catholic school, as we have now with state integrated, non-Catholic families, there's a cap on how many can apply. So aside from that special character issue, they cannot be selected in who they admit. So free schools started up about 10 years after that in the UK. So they've been running a dozen years or more. And at the moment, about half of UK English school children are going to either free school or academy, which means fewer than half are going to traditional state schools because you've got a few who are at private schools still. So that's what happened in the UK. In the US, after many, many years, not all states have charter schools. Nationwide, the numbers are 6% of kids in the United States go to a charter school. The demand is easily double that, but the supply, obviously people need to start up the schools and that's expensive. And the ability to reach agreements, especially if you're in a state where they don't allow for charter schools, then that's non-existent. So you've got 6%, a similar model in the States after 30-odd years. In England, you've got about half of kids after 10, 20 years. I don't know. Mm. We will probably be somewhere in between, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I just, again, looking for quotes here, and I think this is Chris Abercrombie now, who is the acting head of the PPTA. The existing public school system in New Zealand already offers significant choice and innovation, making charter schools unnecessary. So there you go. They're already doing it.
Yeah, and what they're talking about is on paper, we have designated character schools and we have state integrated schools. On paper, we've got provision for special education needs. In reality, people find it very hard to access that, even people who live in populated areas, even people with funds, especially with special education. There aren't always the options that people need. And when you're talking about state integrated private schools, same-sex schools, either you're not living close to one or most families don't have the kind of funds to afford them. So yeah, on paper, it's there. And as far as the designated character schools go, most people don't even know what they are. They assume that you're talking about state integrated. Only 52 have been approved. 9 of them were the former partnership schools from a decade ago. And even though they are, again, on paper, allowed a lot of autonomy and full funding, the Ministry of Education and the Minister of Education have to approve them. and they've only approved 52 ever. So that's right. A barrier there.
Well, I'm telling you now that many of our audience, well, most of them will have grandkids more than kids, but if I had kids now of school age, I wouldn't, I'd be considering this because I would imagine, and I could be wrong here, that there's probably not going to be too much of the gender ideology being thrown around at charter schools, and that would be a sell for me right there.
Yeah, the thing with charter schools is that it allows communities to see what unmet needs there are and create the kind of schools that they want. And yeah. So, yeah, the, all of the discussion, all of the debate around the content of what's taught in public schools and a whole lot of other things to do with the curriculum, methods of teaching, you know, how to teach reading, there's this constant tug of war. I think that's indicative that one size fits all is never going to be something that people are happy with. Charter schools, you know, the model isn't guaranteed to create a great operating school, but what it does is it allows the opportunity for people who see a need for a certain style of teaching, whether that's religious education or Montessori or, you know, some distance learning. There are some great providers from of Maori education who like to open charter schools. It allows them to do that. It allows parents to access them without having to afford tuition. And it gives some of the kids who, and this is assuming they do open, if they open, then a lot of kids who currently have few or no other options will have more options, the kind of options that people with, you know, higher incomes currently have. So that's what it does do.
Yeah. And the other criticism could be it creates more of a private education system or pushes it that way. But
is that a really, negative?
Because well, I was gonna say, does that really matter? Does that really matter?
I mean, if people are willing to pay money for their kids to go to a private school, then that indicates they're offering something that people want.
Yeah.
So if people have access to preferred methods of education without the tuition, that's actually a good thing. And with international research, it shows that that lowers inequalities. The more government funding there is of independently operated schools, the narrower the gaps socially. Nearly half of those gaps can be attributed to public funding of schooling. And New Zealand's really behind on that. Most OECD countries provide at least half of the funding for independently operated schools. We don't.
Yeah. Some catch-up needed there.
Yeah.
And we used to pride ourselves how advanced in all of this we used to be, actually.
Yeah.
You know.
And there are some great state schools out there. There are plenty of good schools operating. The gaps are big here, though. We have large gaps between those who are doing well and those who are not.
Okay, well, it's been really interesting chatting with you. So you're optimistic. You're for the concept, obviously. I feel that it's great to have choice.
Yeah.
If people don't want this, then that's what will happen. They won't survive. End of story. It's the old, what do we call it? Free market system. Really interesting having you on. Thanks so much, Marianne Spertl, researcher at the Maxim Institute. And, you know, hopefully we can talk some more sometime.
Thanks, Paul.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.